Okay, this is talking with Al Barrett on 15 August 79 at the IAU in Montreal. So, could we go back and tell me what your educational background was and how you first came into contact with radio astronomy?
Well, my initial contact with radio astronomy came about from my thesis advisor, Charlie Towns, at Columbia University.
Ah, yes.
And my thesis work was microwave spectroscopy, and I'd always had an amateur interest in astronomy, and in fact I took some astrophysics as a graduate student at Columbia, but it was Towns who tweaked my interest in radio astronomy and pointed out the availability of an NRC postdoc arrangement, which came to pass in 1956.
56, so you got your degree in laboratory spectroscopy.
That's it, yeah.
And what molecules were you looking at, just out of interest?
Oh, we were looking at the indium, gallium, thallium halides, high-temperature spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm. So you were not involved in maser side of things at all, although that was going on in some sense.
That's right. Jim Gordon's ammonia maser was the experiment right beside ours in the laboratory.
I see. So in 56, you decided that you would go to NRL and work with the radio astronomy branch. Was that the goal?
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my start in radio astronomy.
Right.
And the first experiment I was interested in doing was looking for the OH lines.
And which, of course, you knew about, knowing the microwave spectroscopy literature, I guess you knew that there were these lines.
Well, one of Towns' graduate students when I was there was George Desmonis.
Oh, yes.
And he's the one who made the original microwave measurements on the radical OH.
Mm-hmm.
These were not made at 18 centimeters. These were mostly made at K-band. But once you know the constants of the molecule reasonably accurately, you can calculate where the 18-centimeter lines would be.
And what sort of accuracy did you have for those lines?
It's very difficult to estimate those accuracies because the constants involved are a mixture of microwave-determined constants and ultraviolet-determined constants. But it was the guess that the frequencies were accurate to about 10 megacycles.
So when you got to NRL, can you give me some idea of the atmosphere you found there, the people that impressed you as what they were doing and so forth?
I'm not sure I want to do that.
Right.
I was not impressed with being a fresh green student right out of school. One is pretty gung-ho, and one finds quickly in the real world not everybody is as gung-ho as you are. And there were some problems with working long hours and all.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we were paid for it or not was immaterial, but there were still some problems with wanting to work 24 hours a day.
And so the pace was a little bit slower than you would have liked.
The pace was slower.
What about...
In order to start on the OH search, we had to build an 18-centimeter horn to illuminate the 50-foot reflector. And I put that together, tested it, and then we were ready to go. Ed Lilly and I began the experiment. He had more of the astronomy background than I did at that point.
So he more or less told you where to look and gave some idea of what signals you might get?
Sure, it was very much a joint effort, but there's he definitely educated me in an awful lot of aspects of astronomy while we were doing that.
And did you use the same radiometer that was used at 21? Was it that broadband?
Yes, as I remember, we used the same radiometer. And now that you ask, I remember we also put together a front end to feed the back end of that radiometer. And I remember using lighthouse tubes for amplification at 18 centimeters.
Right, I see. Now, Ed Lilly, by the way, gave me one of these marvelous pictures of you two by the blackboard. I'd never seen
it. He still has it.
I'd never seen that one before. That's great.
That was taken from a press release which never came off.
Well, I'll give it some publicity at some stage, many years later. So, tell me then how the search proceeded and what happened.
Well, we were looking for absorption against Cassiopeia and a little bit in the galactic center, but not so much because of low elevations and what have you. And Cass was circumpolar, had a very characteristic signal in 21 centimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, it was a single channel receiver,
right,
with a motor-driven oscillator, which we swept through the 10 megahertz back and forth, looking for the absorption signal.
So that was your estimated uncertainty. That was the range you were going to search over.
That's right. Actually, we probably went beyond that, but I don't remember those details very well.
And you were looking for what we now call the main lines, 1665.
Yes,
and
7. Oh yes, we were. Right. We as I remember, everything was done at 1667. I don't think we looked anywhere else because that was supposed to be almost a factor two stronger than 1665,
sure,
and vastly stronger, an order of magnitude stronger than either of the two satellite lines.
Was it clear to you that absorption was the way to go, or were you thinking that maybe you should look for some emission?
No, we never thought about emission, and, well, we thought about it, but we convinced ourselves that that would be much smaller than the absorption.
Mm-hmm.
So we went with the absorption technique.
And one thing I was wondering is why did you not publish some version of this NRL report in the regular astronomical literature?
As I remember, what we published was our negative result as an abstract of a IIIS meeting in Berkeley, I believe.
That's right.
It was. And that was sufficient, we thought. There were some copies circulated, but we had a rather poor upper limit, lower limit. Upper limit on the signals. And all we thought about this search was that more work was indicated.
Mm-hmm. Now, another question is why did you pick OH? You were available with pretty much the entire literature. Towns had written this article in 54 or 5. It didn't get published until a couple of years later, but I suppose you knew about that.
Oh, sure, we knew about that.